If there are four families, one, two, three, four. This, by the way, in that book is the most erudite thing I've written on the subject. And it analyzes the four major historical families of Reformation Protestantism. And they are, in sequence, the Lutheran, the Reformed, the Anglican, and the so-called Free Church. World Protestantism all stems from those four families. Then, under the American, all the religions that are called, for want of a better word, Protestant, but which really began with an American founder. Now, they are quite detailed, but in general, they are those which build either around a rejection of this of historic Protestantism, or based on a new revelation. Now, the most famous, which rejected established Protestantism, would be the Unitarians. And then those that are built on special revelations, the best known are the Mormons and the Adventists. The Mormons are the revelations of Joseph Smith, and the Adventists are the revelations, especially of Mrs. Helen White, a woman. How obvious can it be? See, I've been talking all day. Now, this is an analytic approach to Protestantism. And for depth, at least for your own use, what I've done is given, in most cases, in full length, verbatim, all the major creeds of these religions. I've got the complete Catechism of Luther in this book, the complete Augsburg Confession, the complete Westminster Confession, the complete creed of the Adventists, the complete creed of the Mormons, each with an introductory essay, and then a long and very analytic index in two ways. All the Protestant churches of America, some 260, are identified with certain creeds. So at a glance, you can tell what they really believe. And I know in teaching in Protestant seminaries, they often need help to know just what they're supposed to believe because of the mixture and integration. For example, there are 24 different Baptist churches. There are 19 Presbyterian churches, and they differ immensely among themselves. A dozen Methodists. So to make sense of the ideology, this is an analysis of the ideology of Protestantism based on their creeds. So there are three ways, at least, that I have handled in, say, the teaching of Protestantism. For a specific religion, and I could, of course, talk about others in the same way. I have found, and this is on a college level, that by the use of a surveyed book, like my book, The Religions of the World, then by the requirement of having paperbacks to support that reading, they do cover a lot of matter, quite apart from class. And I've yet to teach comparative religion where the students didn't just eat it up. It is very interesting, apart from being very useful. So for one subject, I think the most useful as a single religion would be Protestantism, though, of course, others can also be taught. Late this fall, I hope my new book on American Judaism is coming out. It'll be a 600-page book in American Judaism and analyzes the history, the doctrine, and the ritual of American Judaism with about a 60 or 70-page supplement giving all kinds of interesting things about the Jews. You might say a prayer, provided they give me permission to quote them, because some of these things they may hesitate to have me identify. For example, to identify among other Jewish organizations one whose expressed constitutional purpose is to prevent Jews from becoming Christians and to bring converted Jews back to Judaism. At any rate, I'm not sure I'm going to get all the permissions, because there's a lot of copyright you have to, you know, get permission for, and so on. That's a story all by itself. At any rate, religions that are endemic to America, like Protestantism or Judaism, would seem to be, I think, the most useful to teach as a single religious system. Now, for a cluster, American religions, I think, can be taught rather easily by the use of paperbacks. Now here, you've got to know, you know, whom you're teaching. Now, when I teach American Comparative Religion, I generally use my old book in American Protestantism. I use a book like Tracy Ellis for American Catholicism, and a book like Nathan Glazer for American Judaism. Until mine comes out, then I'll use that. But something which they can read, and then comparisons can be made. For a survey of world religions, there must be, I'd say, at least 40 books currently in print in English on world religions, all kinds of them. My own book on world religions went through 6 printings before Doubleday bought the copyright, and they sold out the first 20,000 copies in something like 9 months. So people want it. In other words, people are studying this. And now for that, I brought, and this is not a sales pitch, I just happened among the mail that I received while I was here. I just brought some samples of a correspondence course, which is being offered by, I think I mentioned this, didn't I? Through Loyola University, in world religions. Now, the required reading would be in my own 2-volume paperbacks, plus supported paperbacks in the respective religions. However, along with the text, they get a self-study guide of 260 pages, which I drew up for them, with about 1,000 questions. Now, she won't mind it. Sister Mary Leah Valerie, RSM, July 7th, she sent this in. This is July the what? 26. Religions of the world. Well, she made out her answers. You see, they fill in, and it is drawn from a glossary, which is not here. They send these in, then I have a master answer list, and I have secretarial help, and of course it was a lot of work setting this thing up, but now it's pretty well running itself. And there are people from other countries now that are also beginning to take this course. So I think something should be got in order to really get behind it. Now, in the self-study guide, I have all kinds of analytic questions. I have long sections from the sacred writings. And then, for example, comparing the Gospel of St. John with the treatise on love in the Hindu scriptures. And by the time you finish, you know a lot about the Christian concept of love. At any rate, it just, to me, is very satisfying. In fact, I've got to resist correcting these things because I want to know how they did, but I managed to resist. So for a survey of world religions, there are any number of books that can be used. I would say, however, that there it is risky, unless you know your field, to give the students books in comparative religion indiscriminately. I'd say the nearest thing that I could, in conscience, even in college, and A4CRI in the lower grades, if there were sacred writings in the respective religions which are not tendentious, in other words, which are not out to compare and often to debunk. This is what a lot of books in comparative religion do. They tend to debunk Christianity. For example, there are all kinds of books, but take the most famous, best known is Nos. It's a standard textbook in comparative religion in state universities. I'll take his treatise on Buddhism. Well, he will spend long, dreary pages describing how the conception and the birth of Buddha was just like the conception and birth of Jesus. From a virgin, with visitors from afar, in a stable, with a star. But by the time you read a couple of pages, you're swimming. Now, the average college student, and I suppose even the average teacher of that, well, I don't think Noss himself realizes how he's been taken in. He just doesn't know his field well enough. He doesn't know that the earliest Yataka tales, which are the infancy narrative of Buddha, are 1100 A.D. The whole thing is, and this is the way the Buddhists think, they're eclectic. They borrowed all sorts of things from you name it, and identified with Buddha. As a matter of fact, Celsus did that in the 3rd century A.D. for the Romans. You see what I'm saying, though? You really would have to know your field, and I would even suggest, except for a professional course, that this is one reason, frankly, why I did, apart from my interest, which is considerable, wrote a book in World Religions, which, by the way, I should add, is now available in Germany. It has been published by a German publisher. Great big fat thing. There are very few, in fact, as far as I know, there is no complete coverage of World Religions by a Catholic, except with apologies, yours truly. This kind of complete coverage by a Catholic has not been done. Now, there are individual studies, many of them. It's the result of about 9 years' research. However, World Religions, as a course, can be taught, and with, I think, great success. The field is so vast, however, I've discovered in teaching even a year, let alone a semester, for World Religions. The best thing is to choose certain religions that you would teach in class, and the rest they do in private reading on their own. There's just too much. Well, pardon me. I've got more notes here.
Just
please?
Have you got your strength?
Oh, yes. I have. A suggestion regarding the teaching of Catholic religion with a comparative, you might say, attitude in mind. There's a four-ply plan, or four divisions, that I found are invaluable for the teaching of any religion. In fact, afterwards you fall into a kind of a category, classification. And they are doctrine, ritual, code or conduct, and organization. Now, any religion, even the primitive, can somehow fall into this category, though the organization is obviously primitive. And consequently, the teaching of Catholicism No matter where you touch it, it has all sorts of contacts where you can compare or contrast. Now, I use the word technically. By compare, I mean that there is a likeness. By contrast, there is a difference. You see? Now, Catholicism, all along the line, in fact, I don't know how I could possibly teach now. My mind is just too full of other religious thought. And the Catholic, though, I assure you, I keep that in a very separate and sacred compartment. Nevertheless, in doctrine, any doctrine, God, grace, the afterlife, to mention just three. Now, there is something similar and something unlike, always. So I cannot practically think. My mind is so conditioned, I can hardly think of a single Catholic doctrine without spontaneously thinking of ways in which it is the same and the ways in which it is different from others. You see, as you probably have noticed when I lecture. At any rate, this is extremely fruitful. Let's take Protestantism, which is an easy basis of comparison in doctrine. Well, the concept of God. Now, the concept of God in Catholicism is, of course, the triune God. In Orthodox, classic Protestantism also believes in the Trinity. On the other hand, already in the second of these four families of historic Protestantism, Calvinism, Calvin's concept of God is not ours. Because a God who foreordained some people from eternity to hell certainly is a different kind of a God than we know. What kind of a God is he? He's Manichaean. And you have all sorts of things you can say there. And you can show the Manichaean strain in Calvinism or the sacraments. We have seven, they have two. At most, some don't even have two. Well, now, why do they drop the other five? See? And then what do they mean by sacraments? They don't mean generally what we do. They don't baptize an infant. See, why not? Because they don't believe it does anything. Well, immediately, a sacrament. You mean the baptism wouldn't do anything to a child? That's what they say. Well, immediately, they use the word sacrament, we use it. You see? What a difference. The Bible. The New Testament now is the same in their Bible as ours. But that's only since the beginning of the 17th century. It was about five books less. Well, they brought it back. The Old Testament is still seven books short. Well, why did they drop them? In other words, no matter what you touch, eschatology, obviously a big difference. Heaven, hell, and purgatory. Well, they don't believe in a purgatory. Why not? In other words, everything you touch, and what it does, it just brings out so many facets of Catholicism, which, as a matter of fact, they better have brought out somewhere before they meet it and are not able to cope with it. Ritual. Now, this, of course, is correspondingly endless. And the interesting thing, for example, about the churches, that these generally have some ritual. These have a minimum, by and large. But that their liturgy is not around the Eucharist. For the very good reason, they don't have a sacrifice of the Mass. They don't have a Eucharistic sacrifice. And all kinds of nuances can be brought out in the ritual. And marriage, well, wherever that fits. Well, this fits the other, well, anywhere, under ritual of the sacraments. Marriage is not a sacrament for them. Why not? What is it? So all along the line, then the moral code, vastly different. One of my definitions, which is somewhat limping, but I think is very accurate, I describe, rather than define, Protestantism as Old Testament Christianity. There was a strong preoccupation with the Old Testament, and the ethics of Protestantism are essentially Old Testament ethics. That's why they have divorce. Adultery for them is essentially an act of injustice. If the two agree to separate and remarry somebody else, why not? What a difference, you see? Then, organization. By the way, this is interesting. If you want organization, you go to some of these Protestant churches. Well, they lack in doctrine, ritual, or moral code. They make up an organization. There's nothing like it. Well, it's about 8:30, sisters. Did that help?
Yes.
I have, by the way, I brought, well, it must be 8 or more years ago, I edited a translation from the Russian of the way that in the Russian schools they teach about religion. Have you ever seen it, sisters? Suppose I leave you a copy and you're going to make copies of it. Okay, it's very interesting. It's authentic from the Russian. And how, in other words, what they do with religion, which will, I think, tell you what you should say about communism. I know I brought a copy along.
Thanks, Father.
Well, sister, shall we say a prayer? In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Hail Mary, full of grace,
the Lord is with thee.